And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Friends, this is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Today, Secrets. Secrets, Volume 121. You know, about once a month we get together and just chat as friends. And I like to give you some news items and some slants, you might call them, on the news that really very few people have heard about. And it might be a major newspaper story, but you know, you got the government propaganda side of it, and now you'll just want something called the truth. And then sometimes when we look at secrets, we look at some secrets of God. You know, God has secrets to reveal to his people. In fact, the book of Amos in the Bible, chapter 3, verse 7, I love it. It says, "Surely the Lord God does nothing unless he reveals his secret to his servants, the prophets." God has secrets. Things that God is going to be doing, he reveals only to his servants, the prophets. He doesn't do anything on earth until he's done that. Now, that's a sort of an interesting thing, isn't it? But, you know, he spoke to his prophets through the Bible. And look at all the prophecies there. Well, one thing that God says for sure, that there would be a great religious apostasy, a falling away from the truth in the last days. And that's happened certainly with the false Christian so-called religion of Mormonism. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Oh, it sounds so good. And it's really so evil. Had a man kept calling our ministry last week, because I had exposed the Mormon church, and he said, "Lies, lies, lies," but he never gave us any specifics. Of course they were not lies. He just didn't like me telling the truth. Well, evidently, a man at Brigham Young University, now that's a Mormon university there in Utah, a man named Ray Matheny, M-A-T-H-E-N-Y, is a professor of anthropology at Brigham Young University, and he's done a lot of research about Joseph Smith and the Book of Mormon. In fact, it's one of his most fascinating subjects that he studies in anthropology. And the reason he does is because he's a member of the Mormon Church. And he's a professor at a Mormon university, Brigham Young University. And that's why it's astounding that after much research, he has come out with his conclusions about his own church and its leadership. He says he believes, this is Dr. Ray Matheny, he believes that Joseph Smith made up the whole Book of Mormon. He just made it up. In other words, he's basically saying it's a hoax. He didn't use the word hoax, but what else can you say? If you make up something and you claim it's true, in fact, Joseph Smith said an angel called Moroni, M-O-R-O-N-I, that can also be pronounced Moron-I, I mean, if you believe in Mormonism, you're a moron, I guess, because Moroni, the so-called angel that gave this to Joseph Smith, gave it to him in gold plates and said, "Write this down. Take this down." And the language was something called, I think it was called Reformed Egyptian language. But suppose the angel guided Mr. Joseph Smith on what the words of this Egyptian, Reformed Egyptian language were on these gold plates. Now, very conveniently for Joseph Smith, after he took down all the words on regular paper, the angel Moroni, or Moroni, if you want to pronounce it that way, says, "Thank you very much. Now I'm taking these golden plates up to heaven with me." So now we're just left to believe in Joseph Smith. Did he have some golden plates with words in the Reformed Egyptian language? By the way, linguists today, experts on languages, say they'd never heard of anything called the Reformed Egyptian language. But and why the angels or God would want to write a Book of Mormon that they call another Testament of Jesus Christ, equal to the New Testament, they say. Why they would want, why God would want to do that and use the Reformed Egyptian language is a little strange, don't you think? The Bible that we use today, the Old Testament, is written in Hebrew, translated into English, and the New Testament was written in Greek and is translated to English. Isn't it odd that God would, and the angels would use something called Reformed Egyptian? Well, not if you were a Mason, because the Masons adore and admire everything Egyptian, and Joseph Smith was a Freemason. But in any case, it looks like even the professors at Brigham Young University, the Mormon school, are finding out the truth. Now, before the Mormons out there say, lies, 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 this Professor Matheny, he must be a crummy professor. He must just be a disgrace at that university. Ah, there you're wrong. Dr. or Professor Matheny was nominated as one of the top 10 professors at Brigham Young University for the whole 20th century. In other words, 100 years, he was one of the 10 best professors of all time at the university. Isn't that something? Well, the LDS Church will have to deal with that one, but I found this very interesting. That one of their top professors says, yep, he made it all up. So next time the Mormon missionaries come to your door and say, we want to tell you about the Book of Mormon. Say, I already know about that. Dr. Ray Matheny, one of your professors of anthropology at Brigham Young University, says that Joseph Smith made it up. They'll probably turn absolutely white. Their jaws will drop. They'll get on their little bicycles. They'll pedal out of your sight as fast as they can, because they ran into somebody that knows what's going on. And yet, 15 million people are now members of the Mormon Church. 15 million members. There's really only about two things Mormons do. Number one is they go out and try to recruit more people to become Mormons. And number two, they baptize dead relatives. That's their main job, baptizing the dead. Oh, yeah, or for the dead. I've had Mormons say, we don't baptize the dead. We baptize living people for the dead. Because the dead people out there, they need to go to, you know, to their reward, but they can't do it unless they're baptized. And they died without being baptized, so we have to baptize them in proxy right here on earth. Every year, hundreds of thousands of dead people are baptized by stand-ins, living people who substitute for them. And the name of the dead person is pronounced by the Mormon elder as they put the guy, immerse the proxy in water. You know, I've talked to Mormons, they used to be Mormons, and they said, you know, Tex, I've been baptized. One guy told me he was baptized over 200 times. I said, you were baptized over 200 times? And he says, yeah, for all my dead relatives. I had to come up with, through genealogy, with the names of all my dead relatives, and they baptized me. I went, you know, to the temple, they baptized me for all my dead relatives. I said, boy, they almost drowned you, didn't they? And he laughed, yeah. And now he knows it's ridiculous, but that's what they did. Well, going on to some other religious weirdness, a lot of people ask, is Billy Graham really a Freemason? Well, in his own autobiography, Billy Graham, which he didn't write, how can you have an autobiography that you didn't write? I mean, you can have a biography that you didn't write, but an autobiography? Well, that's the scandal of Christian ghostwriting, you know. But in any case, Billy Graham talks about how many Mason friends he has in his book. And, of course, on the back cover of the Mason book, The Clergy and the Craft, is a little blurb, a little statement, a comment, a recommendation of Billy Graham. And he recommends the Masonic youth group, the DeMolays to everyone. Talks about what a wonderful group, the Masonic group, the DeMolays. By the way, old President Bill Clinton, when he was a young man, joined the DeMolays. And as an adult, as governor of the state of Arkansas, Bill Clinton was chosen in 1988 as the International Alumnus of the Year of the International DeMolay Organization of Freemasonry. Thought I'd throw in that little tidbit. But back to Billy Graham. Got a letter from David Bay. He's of Cutting Edge Ministries. And the organization cuttingedge.org on the web. Subject, Billy Graham being a Mason. Dear Tex, he says, in 1998, I was searching Masonic websites looking for Masonic art I could use. On two different websites, one, the official website for the of the Masons for the state of Louisiana, and the other one, the official state website of Masons for Michigan, I discovered something interesting. They had a list of famous Masons in history. And guess whose name popped up as one of the famous Masons? Yes, you've got it, says David Bay. Billy Graham, the evangelist. Very interesting, isn't it? Billy Graham, a Mason, according to the official websites of the states of Louisiana and Michigan. Now, I knew this, of course, because other people had also told me about those websites, and I went to those websites, and I checked, and yes, it was there, and I printed out a hard copy. So in case later on, if they struck out his name, if it got too well known, and other people other than Masons were going into that website and finding out the truth about Billy Graham being a Mason, if they took out his name to hide it, I decided I better have proof. So I made copies of those pages. And so did David Bay. In fact, David says to me, Tex, I still have printouts of those web pages if you would like them. Well, I've already got them, David. Thank you anyway. Now, when you write Billy Graham's organization and you or Billy Graham himself and say, are you a Mason? He says, no, I'm not. Well, when I was a kid, we had a saying for that. It was a little funny little saying. It went like this. Liar, liar, pants on fire. You're caught, Billy. The states of Louisiana and Michigan, I think they know. And by the way, had a Christian friend who did some research on Freemasonry. He went to Washington, D.C., and he was in the library. They have a library at the Masonic House of the Temple. That's their international headquarters. They'll let you go in there and do research in their library. In the library, in the official librarian happened to be there that day, a woman. And my friend, Robert, went up to the woman and said, and they were doing other things, and they were talking about members. And he says, a lot of famous people have been Masons and are Masons. She said, oh, yes, many. He said, well, tell me, Billy Graham, is he a Mason? She said, oh, yes, he's a Scottish Rite Mason. Would you like to see his folder? They have a folder on famous Masons talking about all the wonderful things, the works that they do. Would you like to see the folder that we have here in the temple library for Billy Graham? Now, my friend didn't really need it. He was just curious, and he said, no, that's okay. But isn't that something, the librarian? She's the one that keeps the membership records. They have a whole file on Billy Graham. And yet Billy Graham says his organization now, not him. See, that way, later on, if they're caught, they can say, oh, I thought he wasn't a Mason. But that wasn't Billy Graham that was talking. That was just one of his assistants. He's not responsible. Oh, no. No, never, never. I got a letter from Joyce in Beaumont, Texas, Joyce Corder. She wrote to me about Billy Graham being a Mason too recently. She says, poor Billy Graham. I knew he had sold out for a mess of pottage because on the Larry King show on CNN, when asked what he thought about Bill Clinton's affairs with the young intern, Monica Lewinsky, Clinton tried to apologize. Graham, Billy Graham, tried to apologize for Bill Clinton. His exact response was, "Why, the president is such a virile man, the women just can't keep their hands off him." In other words, he can't help it. If the women want him, he's just virile. He's just masculine. The women just can't keep their hands off of him, says Billy Graham. Joyce says to me, she says, "Mercy, I knew then that Billy Graham had sold his soul." Well, Joyce, surely the Lord God does nothing unless he reveals his secret to his people. And it looks like that's why you had that understanding. Hey, talking about Freemasonry, you know, I exposed in my book Codex Magica that they worshipped a god named Jabulon, or Jabulon. It's spelled J-A-B-U-L-O-N. Got some interesting information that was sent to me by a good friend, Steve, who wrote to me on the internet and said, "Dear Tex, I remembered," he says in his letter, "I remember that you mentioned Jabulon in your book Codex Magica. Well, I just ran across this item from an African shaman, that is a witch doctor, Credo Mutwa." An African shaman now, or witch doctor, named Credo Mutwa. And here's the exact quote. This African witch doctor, Credo Mutwa, was being interviewed, and the interviewer asked him, or told him, "I read your poem, your pledge. In your pledge, the pledge you make, you mention the name Jabulon. Can you explain who that is?" Credo Mutwa, this African witch doctor, said, quote, "Jabulon, sir, is a very strange god. He is supposed to be leader of the Chutali people. He is a god, to my great surprise, which I find certain groups of white people especially worshiping." Wow. The witch doctor went on to say, we in Africa have known about Jabulon for many, many centuries, we black people. I am surprised, however, there are white people who worship this god, namely the Freemason people in America and in England and other countries. One of his names in the African language is Umbaba Samahongo, the great father of the terrible eyes. We teach in our religion, this African religion, he said, that Jabulon only has one eye. He's one-eyed. And if he opens it, if you look at it, you will die. Wow. Let me stop there just a minute, friends. Here is a witch doctor in Africa saying, we've been worshiping a god named Jabulon for hundreds of years. A god that has only one eye. Now, dear friends, listeners of Power of Prophecy, get out your $1 bills and look again at the Freemasonry god Jabulon on top of the pyramid above the $1 bill. There is a one-eyed god, Jabulon. The devils, the witch doctors, have known about him for hundreds of years, even before they knew of Freemasonry. By the way, it goes on to say, they call him the Old One. The Old One. And it goes on to say, by the way, that he tells the people, this god Jabulon, come on out and enjoy the heat of the sun. There again, we have the sun god. Hey, here's something that's of interest to you. Boy, big old splurge here, news splurge. In USA Today, June 30, 2006, page 13A. Returning to the moon. It says NASA, our space agency, hopes to land astronauts on the moon again by 2018. They're doing it all now. They're putting it all together. There's going to be a new reusable spacecraft designed to carry four astronauts to and from the moon. And I was reading about this. They're really excited about this moonshot. In the year 2018, 12 years from now. And I began to think about it. They think it's such a big deal to return to the moon in 2018. Well, I thought they did that in, what, 1969? 37 years ago, Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and the boys went to the moon. Or did they? Why do we have to wait to 2018? Why do we have to have a new spacecraft? Why not use the old one? It got there just fine and got back, didn't it? You know, we have a video, a funny thing happened on the way to the moon that gives another side of it. Talks about a Hollywood production that occurred and the making of the moonshot. You know, it's fascinating. Hollywood did a movie one time talking about faking a astronaut landing on another planet. Guess who one of the astronauts was in that movie? Who played the astronaut? A man named O.J. Simpson. A man who murdered his ex-wife and another innocent man. And now NASA is also, in its own fashion, a murderer. They're murdering the truth. 2018, we can go back to the moon again. Why wait so long? For 37 years, they've had the technology. Why is it they never went back a second time? You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me once, shame on, or twice, that is, fool me twice, shame on me. They want us to shamelessly accept the fact that finally, by the year 2018, they'll have the technology to go to the moon. I'm not so sure they'll have it even then. The question is, did they have it in 1969? Friends, let me give you a video that you really need to buy. It's a video called Leviathan in Space. Have another one called The Eagle Has Landed. Two videos that expose the occult Masonic reality of our U.S. space program. You'll be amazed at either one of these videos. To get them, just call us toll free here, 1-800-234-9673. Hey, I also want to tell you about a book I came across recently. And on the second half of this program, we're going to have the author of the book as our guest. That's why you'll want to stay with us here as we continue this volume of secrets on Power of Prophecy. A man named John Connor, he's an author. He's going to be my guest on the next half of the program after we take a break in just a minute. And John is author of a book, 416 pages. And the book is only $15, and you can get it. You have to add $4 shipping, a total of $19. Let me tell you how to get John's book. I want you to write it down now, because after I get going with John, I know he's the kind of guy, he's very articulate, and the 30 minutes I've got with him are going to go so fast, I won't have time to ask him his address and all that stuff. So I want to go ahead and give you his address. If you're interested in getting his book, go ahead and write his address down now. After you listen to him, I think you're going to want his book. The title of the book is The Resistance Manifesto. It's like an encyclopedia of the occult, of secret societies, of the Illuminati, of the global conspiracy. One of the better books I've seen. And you know what I like about the book? It also tells you some things you can do nonviolently to fight against the New World Order. That's why it's called The Resistance Manifesto. John Connor is the author again. Hey, here's how to write him if you want to write to him. Or get the book, The Resistance Manifesto. We don't offer it now through our ministry, so you'll have to get it direct from the publisher. And the publisher is, or just write to, The Resistance Manifesto. The address is 1611A. That's 1611A, South Melrose Drive. That's 1611 A. You know, the letter from the alphabet A, you know, dash A would be good. South Melrose Drive, number 308, number 308, Vista, California, or just use the letters CA, Vista, California, 92081. $19, ask for the book, The Resistance Manifesto by John Connor. Again, the address is The Resistance Manifesto, 1611A, South Melrose Drive, number 308, Vista, V as in Victory, I-S-T-A, California, or just C-A, 92081, $19, and say, hey, John, I heard about it on Power of Prophecy and Tex Mars. Send me that book, The Resistance Manifesto, and John will send it to you. Now, let's continue on with our program today. Let's see what we got next. Hey, did you hear in Los Angeles? The Los Angeles Police Department has bought a bunch of unmanned aerial vehicles. In other words, drones, drone aircraft. They're being launched now to spy on us. According to the news report I have here, it says that the LAPD is saying it could revolutionize the way law enforcement agencies carry out surveillance. The drone is called the Sky Seer. The Sky Seer. Remotely controlled. A camera is attached to its belly. And it just flies all over the city. They'll have thousands of them eventually watching you. Watching me. Now, this is an addition to all of the spy cameras they're putting at every stoplight to catch us and to get more money for the government. Boy, don't you ever long for the old days? I do. I'm nostalgic for the days when Big Brother was not quite so vigorous and powerful. Friends, our liberties are being stamped out. It's bad enough you have all this technology. Then you have the propagandist. Tony Snow is one of them. He recently became the spokesperson for the White House, their chief propagandist, so to speak. A lot of people like him. He's a nice, attractive guy, sort of has an easygoing manner. But did you know that he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations? Ah, yes. He's connected with Fox Network. The deception goes on and on. Hey, I had a good friend wrote to me and said, Dear Tex, I've noticed one thing about you. You never pray for Bill Clinton. Well, that's actually, George Bush. Somehow I get them mixed up. They just sort of all fade into one. In any case, George W. Bush, they said, why don't you ever ask people to pray for him? Well, I've actually done that in the past. But you know, I was reading a verse in Psalms, chapter 109, verses 8 through 17, and it was perfect. So, dear friend, you want me to pray for George W. Bush? I'll do it. Here it is. This prayer is taken right from Psalm 109, 8, verse 17. And here's the prayer for George W. Bush. It goes this way. Let his days be few and let another take his office. There it is, friends. Don't ever say I didn't pray for him. Pray for George Bush. Pray for him today, dear friends. Let his days be few and let another take his office. I'll add a little bit. Lord, do it quick, please. This is Tex Morris. Hey, your list of Power Prophecy. I'll be right back after this brief message. Hello, friends. Tex Moore's back again. You know, some years ago, I came into contact with a man named Reggie Haupt, or Hope, as some would call it, H-A-U-P-T. And they call him Bubba, where he comes from in Savannah, Georgia. He's was an attorney, and then, well, he was a crooked attorney. He was corrupt, no doubt about it. And, you know, he was so corrupt he cheated some of his clients and he ended up in prison. Well, that taught Bubba Hope a big lesson. Now, the good news is that that's where he found Jesus Christ, and it turned his life around. Here he gets out of prison. He says, I don't want to be a lawyer anymore. I want to live for the Lord Jesus. Now, think about that. You know, the Apostle Paul was a wicked, wicked man, a killer. And the Lord turned him around. He was one of those most learned intellectuals and religious leaders of his day. But all he wanted to do was live for Jesus after he had that experience on the road to Damascus. And this is what happened to Reggie Hope, or Bubba, as they call him. They knew that he was one of the slickest attorneys in the whole city. Well, you know, God can use every skill possible in a very honest and truthful way. And you know, as Mr. Hope looked around, and by the way, he runs a ministry now and helps the homeless there in Savannah, Georgia, Christian ministry, full time. So you can see the kind of heart this man now has, a new heart. But he began to discover something about the city of Savannah. He noticed, even when he had been a corrupt lawyer, how it was the Freemasons that seemed to control the city. Everything about Savannah, Georgia was controlled by the Masons. And somehow God put in his heart the desire to find out more about this Freemasonry. Well, when he did, he discovered it was evil, that the Masons worshiped gods of a very evil nature. And Mr. Hope put out a book, one of the best books that I've ever read. And I'll tell you, I was at a Christian publishing house in South Carolina, and they took me into this room, and it had thousands of books, it looked like to me. And they said, here are books, one each of all the books we've published over the last 30 or 40 years. You know, they kept a sample copy. And I was just browsing, and I came upon this book called The Gods of the Lodge. The Gods of the Lodge. And that led me to want to, and by the way, I said, I gotta have this book. Do you have an extra copy of it? Well, they went in their files and all that, and after some time, they finally came back with another copy of the book for me. Then I contacted the author. He said, yeah, I wrote the book, but we don't have any more copies of it. You know, nobody wanted to buy it. Couldn't get any bookstores to take it. Couldn't get any Christians to take it. It was too powerful a message. Well, I said, I'll take it. Not only that, we ended up eventually publishing it. The Gods of the Lodge by Reginald Haupt, Jr. An amazing expose. Find out for yourself what the Masons really believe. Find out the shocking truth about the Masonic initiations. Why do they have the Egyptian and Babylonish architecture of Masonic temples? Remember, friends, the Bible says, for what communion can a man of God have with the devil? And in fact, it is none other than Lucifer who is the true God of the Lodge. This is the most outstanding book. 195 pages, just $12. 195 pages, just $12. Now please add shipping and handling, $4. Total of $16. Ask for the book, The Gods of the Lodge. You'll be glad that you did. Now, how to get this book? Call us toll free, 1-800-234-9673. Use your charge card, 1-800-234-9673. Or you can go to our website, powerofprophecy.com. Type in the search engine there, Gods of the Lodge. It'll take you right to it. It'll explain all about the book, tell you how to get it. Gods of the Lodge by Mr. Haupt, 195 pages. By the way, you can send us a check for our money order for $16 or cash to Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Ask for the book, The Gods of the Lodge. We've got plenty of copies. We published it ourselves to make sure. I don't know if anyone in the world has the book other than Power of Prophecy, and that's the way God wanted it. Let's return to our regular program now. Hey, we have a guest with us. I told you that we would have John Connor. He sent me his book, the Resistance Manifesto several months ago. It looked interesting to me. I took it home and I read it immediately. And boy, did I like that book. It's 416 pages. It's a virtual encyclopedia of the Illuminati, of the occult. And by the way, it also talks about the Masonic Lodge. We're going to tell you how to get it in a minute. We're not offering it right now. We may in the future, but fortunately, John Connor, the author of it himself, has a quantity of the books left. I don't know how long they're going to last. So friends, you need to get a copy of The Resistance Manifesto. I like the title. Hey, John Connor, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Hey, Tex, it's an honor. God bless. I've been a student of your work for quite some time, so I'm very honored to be with you today.
Well, listen, you've been doing a great job, too. You got a website you offer this book to. What is that website address for folks that are internet connected?
The website's the title of the book, The Resistance Manifesto, and there are some excerpts posted there. And more importantly, what the site has become very well known for is my phone calls into mainstream media mockingbirds like Sean Hannity, Alan Colmes, Michael Savage, and even some half-baked Christian radio show hosts who refuse to take these topics seriously. And there are almost an hour worth of phone calls that people can listen to on the website of Sean Hannity and these other mockingbirds blocking these subjects and refusing to take them seriously and ridiculing anyone who calls up and inquires about them.
Well, you know, some people say it's almost impossible to get into those shows. Michael Savage, the Sean Hannity program. God must be preparing a way for you to call up and get in those shows and get your message across.
I do feel it's the divine hand working, and I'm very surprised that I've been able to get through to each one of them maybe five or six times, so it's not just once or twice. And again, there's a compilation of nearly an hour worth of phone calls on the site that people can listen to, and they're floating around also on YouTube and Google Video, and I have some other videos that I've produced attempting to get into the Mormon temple here in San Diego where I was told to leave for trespassing and then threatened with arrest for looking around the temple. So there's some very funny videos and some informative videos floating out there on the web about the Resistance Manifesto also.
Now they need to make sure they use the word theresistancemanifesto.com, is it?
.com.
Okay. John Connor. I think people will like it. I went on it and there was a lot of good information. And yes, I went down to that section where you just simply click on and then you can listen in to your conversations with some of these big time, supposedly conservative talk show hosts. But of course they have an agenda and I think they're all part of the problem. Well, you know, one of the things I like about your book, the very title of it, The Resistance Manifesto. What are we resisting against?
We are resisting the evil satanic forces that have dominated this world for quite some time. Now, Jesus, in a sense, started the resistance. And I chose the title, The Resistance Manifesto. It's a spin-off of the Illuminati's manual, The Communist Manifesto, which Karl Marx was essentially the secretary of that book. When I studied him in college, we were told that the communism was his philosophy, and he put it down into a book and spread it around. But when I started studying this a little bit more, I realized that he was nothing more than a secretary for the Illuminati to spread their ideas around to the masses. So I thought, you know, most of the people who are fighting against the New World Order, there are a couple different terms people use, patriots, info warriors. And so I thought, well, this really is a resistance movement, because when the Nazis were invading other countries and spreading their satanic ideology across the planet, the people who were fighting the Nazis were called the resistance, and people fighting them were resistance fighters. So that's why I decided to title the book, is anybody who's against Satan and against the New World Order is in a sense in the resistance. And this is the resistance against the New World Order, against the Fourth Reich, and against Satan's kingdom, which they're building very rapidly here on planet Earth.
Well, you know, a lot of people ask the question, can we stop it? Is it too late? A lot of Christians seem to be fatalist. And then, John, I have a lot of people who write to me and say, well, if it's prophesied to occur, who am I to try to stop it? How do you answer defeatist people I'm wondering if they really are Christians. Who would ask a question like that?
That's a very good question.
Why, you know, a woman wrote to me recently, she said, why, we shouldn't fight evil. Jesus said to let it grow up, you know, like the tares until the end of time. We shouldn't fight evil. And I thought, goodness gracious, has this woman ever read the Bible? The whole Bible is a fight against evil by the prophets. And they had different methods. You know, some had this method, some had that God had given them. But certainly, and then there are people that say, resistance, you must be anti-government. How do you answer all of these little critics out there, the complainers?
Those are some good points that you make. The resistance, I think, it's a personal resistance. It's a condition within your heart and within your soul. And, well, we're never going to stop the Antichrist from coming. What you can do is you can prevent the Lord's wrath from coming upon you by getting right with God, by accepting the Lord, and by repenting from your sins and walking the narrow path. And so what the whole purpose of this book is, and of the resistance movement, is to help us to get into the right relationship with the Lord, and that is the only way that's going to save us. There's two teams here. There's two sides fighting, and one team is going to lose. So, like Jesus said in Matthew chapter 10, verse 34, don't think I came to bring peace to the earth. He said I came to bring trouble and to make people choose sides. So what this comes down to is, we're not going to stop Lucifer from temporarily ruling over planet Earth, but what we can do is we can save ourselves, we can save our souls from the evil that is going to be brought upon us. Now, about the resistance being an anti-government, I don't think that the Jews that were fighting against Hitler and that people that were against the Third Reich were anti-government. They were anti-tyranny and evil. So we're a very peaceful organization. In the book, I actually lay out some very peaceful strategies for how to resist. And there's a very clear distinction between a resistance and an insurgent. Now, insurgents are fighters, criminal fighters against the government. Resistance, if you look it up in the dictionary, says that it is an underground organization fighting against the oppressive regime of a tyrannical government.
It seems to me that when you study our founding fathers, as they're called, you know, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington and such, their entire lives were built on the predicate, on the proposition that men have a right to resist evil. And in fact, silence makes a coward of men, was their belief. And it seems to me that you're right in line with our nation's founders, John, and yet the propaganda put out today is that this is the resistance against evil somehow is wrong. And of course, maybe it's that our leaders try to wrap themselves in a good blanket, and they try to say that you and I are fringe people. But if you yourself simply partake of the principles of the Bible and of people like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, it seems like there's no way you could be on the wrong side.
And, you know, when Jesus said, turn the other cheek, I think that what he was meaning was to refuse and to avoid unnecessary repercussions. He didn't mean that if somebody's breaking into your house or if somebody's trying to rape your wife, that you're just supposed to turn and let it happen. There, if you read, this is our duty to actually fight against evil. And these phony preachers, these mainstream mockingbird preachers, and I'm sorry to say, many if not most churches who are 501c3 government-sanctioned churches cannot give you the full picture, or they'll have their tax-exempt status pulled, as you, Tex Mars, very well know. They have taken control of the churches to help prevent them from getting the masses to rise up and to do their duty and to say no, to stand up and to resist what's happening. So you can't get the full picture, I don't think, from most churches today, and that's very, very sad.
They've sweetened the deal a little bit. You know, not only can you get tax-exempt status if you do what the government tells you to and don't preach or do certain things under the 501c3, John, but now you can actually get a grant of money from the government under the faith-based grant program. So if you're a good boy, church, and do what the government tells you to do, they may, you know, give you $20,000, $50,000, $100,000, even $1 million.
No, Pat Robertson said that the VeriChip, there's nothing to worry about. And he said, well, it's not the mark of the beast. Now, whether it is actually the mark or just the precursor, or what I call the Pandora's box of the mark of the beast, is irrelevant. The bottom line is that it is coming close. It is the precursor, and for him to dismiss that is just, it's absolutely incredible, and I am just beyond words with him blowing it off, saying that it's not a big deal, and almost appearing to endorse such a device.
But you see the Illuminist influence on this man, Pat Robertson, because he's also said that he doesn't see anything wrong with the policy in Red China of forcing people to have women to have abortions, forcing them to have abortions, mm-hmm. Not pro-choice, but forced choice. He doesn't see anything wrong with it. He said, hey, after all, they got too many people over there, he says.
And
he wants us to go over to Venezuela and kill the elected president, Mr. Chavez. So
yeah,
it's okay to assassinate this guy. Kill him.
What would we do if our local pastor or minister were to say such a ridiculous thing?
Hey, they do all the time. I hear about Baptist pastors and others who are saying it's okay to kill the Palestinians. They're like nothing. They're like, you know, it's the Israelis that should be given everything. It's the Jews. Bless the Jews, kill the Arabs. That's pretty well what the Southern Baptist denomination is saying as a whole, John, right now.
In Alice Bailey's Illuminati book, The Externalization of the Hierarchy, which I would bet is mandatory reading for all Illuminati members, and I'm pretty sure that book sits on the library in the Skull and Bones tomb for the Brotherhood of Death members, she lays it out and she explicitly states that there are hidden members within the Christian church which are connected with the Illuminati and who are planning and setting the stage for the emergence of Lucifer. And in her own book, she states that Lucifer will rule planet Earth when he comes. And in the Bible, it says that Jesus is going to come from the sky to destroy the Antichrist. And she even suggests that Lucifer may be coming, just flying into Jerusalem from an airplane or a helicopter, and that's how you explain that passage. So they're setting the stage in secret. Also in that book, which I just find fascinating, it's hidden in plain view. I mean, it's not like it's some secret hidden book. Anybody can get it. And also it says that when the time is right, that the hierarchy will emerge from the darkness and make itself known. So I find it fascinating that they're lying to us now. The high-level Freemasons, the Skull and Bones members, they deny that they're worshiping Lucifer. They say, oh, well, no, we worship a god. We don't worship Satan. That's ridiculous. So they're lying to us now because when the Antichrist comes, they're going to step out from the shadows and announce what they've been doing and say, oh, yes, by the way, we've been preparing this for many, many centuries. And, yes, we do worship Satan, I guess we can tell you now, since he's here.
Well, you know, so many people over the years have, you know, laughed and scorned and ridiculed when I give these warnings, the same as you're giving now, John. Now they come back, and I ask them, well, look, these things are taking place now. We're losing our sovereignty. They're setting up the North American Union. What do you think about it? And many of these same people are who told me before, well, if this were true, if they were ever try to set up a North American Union and erase America's borders with Mexico, then we would really be up in arms about it. But that'll never happen, of course. Now I tell them, well, look what the Council on Foreign Relations wants to do. They're setting up a North American Union. And they're saying they're going to do it by 2010, and Bush and Cheney agree with it. And now these people, John, are saying, well, what's wrong with that? Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. Why, this is good. Free trade. Cheap labor. So, you know, it's an amazing thing when evil finally shows up at their doorstep that they promised they would fight. They didn't believe it would come. But now that it's there, they look at it and say, you know, that's not so evil after all.
Yes. And these are going to be the same people that when the Antichrist comes are going to say, well, you know, maybe that really is God, you know, and they're going to worship him. And that's what Joseph Smith set up the Mormon Church for. That's what the Jehovah Witnesses are for. And I fully believe that when Lucifer incarnates a human, that they will be one of the main motives and methods for propagating that this is the Christ that has come, and everything is just okay. Interesting side note, my own mom, my mother called me and said, you know, did you hear about the Wisconsin professor that, you know, said that 9/11 was an inside job and everybody's trying to get him fired? And, you know, my mom's just a very simple woman. She just likes to plant flowers and spend time gardening. And she doesn't like to worry about the details of 9/11 and such things. But now she is even coming around calling me when these things are becoming on the mainstream press. And it went, the 9/11 inside job went from just a few individuals, just on a, you know, a fringe movement on the, quote, internet, to magazines, to New Yorker magazine, to Maxim magazine. And then all of a sudden now it's being reported in the New York Times, in Reuters, on C-SPAN, and all these professors and the scholars for 9/11 Truth are making it onto the mainstream press. So the movement is getting bigger and bigger, and our voices are just getting louder and louder, and pretty soon it's going to be impossible to deny us.
Oh, I think you're right, and you know, the resistance movement is growing. And you know, I call it also the truth movement. Although maybe you come up with a better name for it, John, the resistance movement, which employs truth. It seems like truth is our great weapon, doesn't it?
That's the only weapon that we have. And that's the only accurate term I can think of to, even though we do fight this, now they're going to say that that's a fighting word, and You're implying some sort of violence. What do you mean? You're fighting the government. You must be a terrorist. So I do like to choose the word resist. We're resisting this. They're saying this is what we need to do. They're implementing policies that we don't want, that we've never wanted, we don't support. And so we're going to stop. We're going to fight them. We're going to cause them problems. We're not going to go along with this. We're not going to just go down without a fight.
And I agree, and I think we're also extending our border, so to speak, because I see left-wing and right-wing coming into this. People used to say I'm a Republican or Democrat, but people hate the terms now, and they know there's not a dime's worth of difference. Well, let me ask you some questions, John, if I could,
sure.
About specifically about how to resist. Education. Is this a powerful thing, you know, using the internet, videos, books like your book, The Resistance Manifesto, articles? Is this, do you see this as one of the most effective methods?
I think it's one of the most effective, because if you only have part of the truth, if you only have half of the story, you can't make decisions that are going to be beneficial to you. I mean, if you only read half of a book, how are you going to know what happens in the end? You're not going to know. So I myself used to be fairly fearful right after 9/11 when the propaganda machine started passing out, just pumping out fear that the terrorists might do this. Terrorists may attack you in this way. And so the masses of the people who think that there's this major Al-Qaeda network out there that has sleeper cells all over America is fearful and just thinks, well, you know, I'm just a little normal citizen. There's nothing that I can do. So we better just let the people who are in charge do what they say is best. And here it's been almost 5 years since the 9/11 inside job. And I see these mockingbirds on TV saying there may be Al-Qaeda sleeper cells still waiting in America, waiting for the green light. There may be Hezbollah sleeper cells in America, just waiting for the green light to attack. Well, are they? They're still waiting. It's been 5 years. We're over there killing terrorists and taking over other countries. Wouldn't they have gotten the green light by now if they were here?
Well, you know, we know the whole thing was fake from the beginning. If the Arabs, the Muslims, hate the Jews so much and only punished America because we're helping the Jews, helping Israel, then why is it that in all of these years they've never taken aircraft and smashed them into Israeli skyscrapers? I mean, Tel Aviv has Haifa, have plenty of huge skyscrapers today. I mean, they got big expressways, giant buildings, department stores. The Arabs have never hijacked a plane and smashed it into a skyscraper in Haifa. That would be the first place you'd go, wouldn't it? Of course, all of this was just totally ridiculous, you know, from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's one thing I like: giving emotional pain. You know, people say, why write your congressman? They don't care. But you know what? They're human beings. And I like to write them anyway, just to give them what for. And you know, I know it causes them emotional pain when they're voting for the Illuminati's interest, but they're getting thousands of emails and letters from all these people saying, you dirty dog. You know, nobody likes to get that. And what it causes is these bureaucrats and these politicians, they can't take the heat. They eventually have to retire. They're so pressured. And every once in a while, they pay attention to the people. They're so frightened to go home and campaign again. Some of them are worried to death about going home, what the people are going to say and do to them.
That's part of the reason why many 9/11 truth activists have been able to make it onto CNN and Fox News and MSNBC. And now with Alex Jones' L.A. conference being broadcast on C-SPAN, some naysayers say, well, you know, if the media is such a controlled system, why would they even let something like that happen? Well, if there's enough pressure on them, if there is enough people demanding to see something, somebody in a position is going to bend. There's going to be some editor, some producer, somewhere who says, you know, I really want to do this show. I know you say that we shouldn't have this guest on, but I really think that it's important. We need to do it. And so that's why if we keep the pressure on and keep emailing, keep phone calls, it's going to be undeniable to shut us down.
I agree with you. My mother called me up one day. Talk about your mother calling you, John. And she said, son, I have a friend from Florida, goes to church there, and he was telling me about this book. She says, and it does this and it does that, and it's a tremendous book. She said, it really sounds interesting. I wanted to call you and let you know about that book. She said, I don't know who the author is. And I said, well, I do, Mom. She said, oh, who? I said, a guy named Tex Mars. It was my book she was talking about. So it just shows you. Sometimes we need to even educate. I try hard my own family members. Hey, John, we've run out of time here. It sure has been a pleasure being with you. I hope you'll honor us by coming on again soon.
Anytime, Tex, anytime.
All right, dear friend. Hey, you've been listening to John Connor here. What an interesting guest. The Resistance Manifesto.